Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Yadavadas. Grihastha Vaishnavas have to remain under the regulation of the Smartas, the Karmakandi Brahmanas. Otherwise, they face problems in society. How can they cultivate Shuddha Bhakti under these circumstances? Anantadas Babaji. Grihastha Vaishnavas have to conform to certain social conventions, such as Vivaha, Shraddha, and so on. However, they are not required to perform karma, fruitive activities for the purpose of materialistic ambitions. Does that make sense? In other words, what's the standard stuff, that's what's going. But what's extra stuff, that's what your own personal desires, that doesn't have to be done. Right? If a person is able to dovetail all activities with Krishna's service, then the imperfections are rectified. For example, a person should not marry with the intention of expanding his dynasty. Rather, he should think that he's accepting Krishna's maidservants as his life partner to establish a Krishna-conscious family. Such resolutions are favorable to bhakti. Right? Because in the full vivaha, then the opening mantra where the groom starts interacting with the bride is, this bride belongs to Vishnu. That's the first statement. Like that. So, that's established by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, right? Under Sanatan Goswami. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving that same position here. Grihastha Bhakta will observe Shraddha by giving Krishna Prasad to the departed soul as Pinda and feed and offer charity to Vaishnava Brahmins. This is spiritually beneficial to him. Because now you're doing the Shraddha, but the main point is that everything's Prasad and you're feeding Vaishnava Brahmins. So the other one, you'll find some very qualified Brahmin. He may be Vaishnava or not, but here you're specifically Vaishnava Brahmins. So then you get that good association. On account of including the Vaishnava activities of Shuddha Bhakti, there will be no hindrance on the path of Bhakti. Social dealing should be conducted dispassionately and with detachment, while spiritual activities must be executed in sadhu sangha. When all these performances are pruned of their imperfections, Just observe that the majority of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eternal associates are Grihastha Bhaktas. Since the dawn of history, many devotees who were Rajarshis, Devas, and Rishis were Grihastha Bhaktas. You must understand that Grihastha Bhaktas are universally worshipable. Right? So it means it's dispassionately. It means you perform it properly. You have the focus, the attention, the intelligence. You make the endeavor like this. But it's not you're making that endeavor because you yourself have so much material desire to fulfill, right? And so therefore then you're applying it on that platform. Jai Ho, Hare Krishna.
Sometimes the person is perform some activities, we have to be quite forceful.
No, forceful is another thing, because that's just what it takes to get something done. See, dispassionately, there's a difference here. That dispassionate doesn't mean that there's not proper endeavor, energy, and endeavor, energy, intelligence,
determination.
Yeah, determination, all these things. That's understood that will be there, right? It means that I'm doing this because I want the result for myself. Because passion means I'm doing the work nicely to get the work for myself. So motive goodness means you're doing it nicely, but because it's what you're supposed to be doing. This becomes sometimes hard to understand. You know, we have the ideas that, well, if I'm doing it like that, it's not real. You know what I'm saying? But the point is people pay money to see dramas, and everybody knows it's not real. There's not one person that thinks it's real. But people pay money. Why? Because they just want to see something well performed. It's not that they want to see something real, because in actuality, what is real in this world? Other than name, the deities, you know, associating with Vaishnavas, there is no real. Does that make sense? So this idea that if I don't perform it with that passion, it won't be good. Because passion, we're equating that passion means I'm doing this because I want to do this. Right? And if I don't want to do it, then I have to do it, so then I kind of put in that effort. That's the difficulty. The Western kind of concept is, if I'm doing something out of duty, like before it had some noble meaning, some romantic meaning, his duty and all that, and the only thing left maybe is like to your country, you know, he died for his country, or his duty to man and country, like that. But if it's duty in household affairs, then it's considered to be just, you know, not real. It's not a game. Where's the substance? Where's the reality? Does that make sense? Somehow or another, it's become like that. I guess the late 1700s were a blow to the romantic, you know, kind of movement. Does that make sense? So it doesn't mean that to get something done that there isn't the appropriate force or energy that's applied. Just like, let's say, you want to, you know, take the top off a bottle. Sometimes it doesn't come off easily, so you have to use more force. You know what I'm saying? But the point is look at it this way. Let's say you have to use force on this bottle. Okay? It's just not opening properly. Right? So then, now, there's two ways you can go about it. It means dispassionately, means using your intelligence, or passionately, like, why is every time I get a bottle of these olives that are from the other side of the barbed wire there, that they never open? Okay? Now, what's going to happen here? Which one of them you will open it better? The first one. So that's the thing, is we can see that actually it works better. You'll get a better result by performing your duties dispassionately. But the problem is generally we only will do our duties nicely if there's passion. That's the problem. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of understanding that the only difference between the mode of goodness and the mode of passion is whether it's for you or whether it's for a higher purpose. See, mode of ignorance, it's you're doing whatever you want. Mode of passion means you're doing actually what you're supposed to be doing. Just you're doing it for yourself. Mode of goodness means you're doing what you're supposed to do, but because for a higher purpose. Mode of ignorance means you do whatever you like. You know what I'm saying? But when we establish that the rule is you do whatever you like, then we think we're acting in passion. It's actually ignorance. You know what I'm saying? In modern society, you do whatever you like. That is your duty. That's your right. That's your obligation. You know, and if you're doing following rules because that's, you know, the social norm or things like somehow or another that you're not supposed to do, but then you're supposed to accept the social norm of not following them. Very interesting. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is that this dispassionately just simply means that it's not for your own purpose. That you're doing it simply because this is what you're supposed to do. Because as a grihastha, then there's things to do. Right? Yes.
And if your conditioning comes inside, comes into the action,
right?
And like for example, you have a house, and you can have a small house, it would be suitable. You can have a bigger house.
It's more suitable.
More suitable.
big house, really suitable.
So if we talk about these passionate activities which are for the Lord, so the small house will be okay. When we're satisfied with that,
No. But the point is even here is you have to be able to separate. Okay, you have a bigger house because of desire, okay? But the point is how do you take care of the house? How do you see the house now that you have it? Does that make sense? In other words, the conditioning is such you situate yourself how you will be comfortable, right? The idea when Prabhupada says comfortable, it means you're not uncomfortable. Does that make sense? That's comfortable. Comfortable is you're not uncomfortable. Comfortable doesn't mean luxurious. Comfortable means whatever state of existence for you is comfortable. Okay? Does that make sense? So therefore, let's say the queen in the palace, that's just comfortable. Do you understand? Now, within that, arranging special situations for herself, that might be luxury. But just being in a palace, for her, that's normal. Does that make sense? You know, or for a Brahmani, then, you know, being in a little hut in the forest, that's normal. Does that make sense? So, comfortable is just whatever, because we're discussing conditioning. So the conditioning means that it's what the conditioning is. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is, see, what we do is that we somehow or another make a distinction that whatever we say is normal, that's Krishna conscious. And whatever is outside of our realm, if it's above, then that's over the top. That's luxury. That's gross sense gratification. And what's below our standard, then that's being austere and fanatic and, you know, not being really practical, you know, being sentimental. Does that make sense? So whoever you talk to, when they're explaining these levels, they're always going to explain according to that. But the point is that it's just what is comfortable. It means you have these things, you don't think about it. You know, you get up in the morning, you go into the bathroom, you know, you actually have water that works, the lights go on, you know, you actually have hot water, or stuff like that, you know, the stuff is put in the bathroom where you can actually find it. It's not uncomfortable. You just go in there, take a bath, and put on your clothes and go to Mangal Arati. You know what I'm saying? But someone who's, let's say, you know, doesn't do like that, they have a different situation. There's a little tap there in a bucket like that, and, you know, they have to put their little thing in. So for them, if that's what their normal is and they're comfortable with that, for them, the other thing, that would be luxurious. They may get distracted. It means if it comes on its own accord, then fine. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're working with something, they give you this place to stay in, and it's nicer than what you're in, then fine. You know what I'm saying? In other words, what it is that by it being there, you'll just think it's normal and not think about it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like, you go, you stay in a fancy hotel. What's the problem with the fancy hotel in context of what you're talking about? Yeah, you're just always, wow, look at the bathroom, look at this, look at the television screen, look at this, that, you know, look at the window out there. And, you know, it's just, that's all you look at, you know. But people who all they do is live in hotels, for them it's just normal. You know what I'm saying? So then it's a matter of this hotel's okay, and oh, we're in this one again. You know what I'm saying? It's not something special. Okay, you put them in the presidential suite, you know, then they'll go, okay, now this is nice. But otherwise, it's just normal for them. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that when we're dealing with this, that being able to deal with it for ourselves means we also are able to deal with it about others. That's the point. The grihastha bhakta, because he has to work in the social scene, he has to be able to accommodate that. Right? And at the same time, as if for the renunciates, if they're going to deal with it, they also have to be able to accommodate that. That they live simply, they don't have anything. These others, they have so much, it doesn't matter to them. Does that make sense? Because you have what you need. They have what they need. You don't require it, you don't have it. You require, but require means it's just a normal part of your life. Does that make sense? But it's also within your means. You know what I'm saying? For you to put in the normal amount of time of work, the amount of money that you get, you can maintain that particular lifestyle. Does that make sense? You know, one man goes out, works all day, brings home a few, just a small amount of money. Another person goes out, works the same amount of time, and brings back millions. So it's whatever comes easily within, without taking out extra time. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of what you need and what you can actually afford. You have to find that balance. Does that make sense? So that's the responsibility. And then you don't worry that someone else has more. Like that. Because if you do, you'll go nuts. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It seems like inherent within her question is, if you're advancing in Krishna consciousness, shouldn't your normal change? In other words, I come and my normal is, okay, I was raised in luxury.
Okay.
I'm learning austerity, I'm supposed to be brahminical. So I think she was kind of asking, well, is it wrong to want what I used to have? Because that used to be normal, but is that normal now? Shouldn't that be abnormal because I'm a Brahmin? Something like that.
No, I mean, Sudama Brahmana had more than Indra had. It's whatever comes easily. You know, it's whatever is the situation that you have. So it's, you know, you can take a devotee before he was a devotee, he was very rich. Now, after being a devotee, he's still rich. So it's not a problem, because when we're talking about it naturally goes down, we mean it naturally goes down when you hit 40, 50. You know? But one is younger than that, one's supposed to deal with all those interests that one has that's not against the principles. You know, it means you like saris, the time to buy it is before you're 50. You know? You like gold, bangles, you like, you know, furnitures, curtains, you know, nice, you know, kitchen, nice this, you know, all that. Nice. You're supposed to do that before 50. I know it's a popular thing here is once you hit 50, then you redo your whole place. But that's called midlife crisis. That's not called the normal grihastha scene, you know. So that when you get to that age, then it's been there, done that. Then if it's a matter of, okay, money's there, we have this facility, you know, it's comfortable, there's no need to change it, then we just stay like this. But because it's so big, we can have programs, we can do this and that. Because before, it's like, how often does the lady actually like to have people come over to her house? You know, it's like whenever she feels like it. You know, she feels that way and wants to be a host, because that takes a lot of energy. So generally, the younger Vaishnavas, unless it's normal that they're very social, don't do it. You know, it's not that like in this community of thousands of devotees that are a lot of people eating at each other's houses and going and you know, it's like an open door policy kind of thing. It's very, very, you know, because the society we've grown up in is always just a nuclear family, so you don't really do anything. You don't even know who the neighbors are, you know, that kind of thing. So if that's there, but if it's found that, you know, okay, we have all this facility, but we find that it's not so important for us anymore. And it's becoming a burden. Because it's a burden, that's why you would naturally go down. Because we have this big place, but we have to spend all the time cleaning it or guiding the servants or doing whatever has to be done. So therefore, I'd rather be spending my time doing something else. So you get something, but it's still, when you downsize, it's still going to be what you're comfortable with. Because if you're thinking about it, it's too much, but if you're thinking about it, it's too little, it's the same thing. So you'll naturally downsize. But what I was trying to bring out is that this will be different for everybody. You know, so you always have the one person that, you know, walks around, they have those boards on the front and the back, you know, and saying the end of the world is nigh and all that. And they're going to be saying how everyone's living in luxury and this and that, and this is all that. You're building your own place. Oh, you know, you're such a this and that. And going on and on and on and on like that. But the problem is they can't accommodate that someone has different than theirs. Because if you take less than what they have, why don't you live it less? Because there are people who live it less. You know, you walk down that Goshala Road. You know, you get to the end. You turn left. Now that is little, like that. You know what I'm saying? The Westerners are not talking about that. You know, they're not talking about that. You know, and even that, they're making it fancy, because those used to be just mud or chetai. You know, but seeing all the other buildings now, they put in some, you know, 5-inch walls, you know, woo, you know, stuff like that, you know, and they actually have, you know, each house kind of has their own pump and toilet when they used to be much more common, you know, but there's one toilet out the back and everybody used to use that one, you know, so the thing is there's always that thing is conditioning will, that's what I'm saying, is you'll find that kind of place, you know, but it's to be honest, because each individual has to themselves make that decision. No one can make it for you. Because what is comfortable, in other words, comfortable means what you're not going to notice. Like that. That means you're not going to notice it. So if it's less than that, you'll notice it. You're inconvenienced. If it's more than that, then you sit back and, you know, take too long doing things, you know, lounging around on your couch or, you know, whatever it is, you know. So the idea is that it's what works for you. So if you see that what I lived before, that was basically too much and this is comfortable, then that's good because you're able to see. But the point is being able to see. So if what I lived at before, that's actually going to be workable and comfortable now, then that means you're conscious. You know? And if you're able to cut it down, then that's good. But it's not, there's not like a timeline that it has to be now, especially the younger grihastha, like that. Generally speaking, the younger grihastha, unless it's coming into a, you know, more of a traditional situation, it doesn't start off big. You know, the tradition is there's a big house, you get married, you're still in the big house. You know, but now it's kind of like you go off on your own in some little out-of-the-way place and then work your way up. So you finally do get it together by the time you're 50, 60. Yeah, like that, you know. So the devotees are just living how they normally would, right? You know, like that. You know, so, damn, Maya's so clever, right? You know, and I get that old and you can't take care of it, right? And then it's a burden, you know. You worked your whole life to get that and then it's a burden, right? So it's, but she knows how to make you into a donkey. So the point you're making is included in that. You have to be able to accommodate all that. Is that what is comfortable? What works? But the point here is that dispassionate means whatever it is, it's being done because that's what's going to be favorable. Right? It's my duties, and it'll be favorable. Like that. So that takes maturity on the individual's part that they can appreciate what that is. So that, technically speaking, to be able to do that means you're advanced. Like that. Because otherwise you have people in small houses that, you know, want bigger houses. And you have people in bigger houses that are only comfortable actually in a bigger house, but due to the motive passion they want to give it up because it's too much work. You know? In other words, they want everything. But at the same time, it's too much work, and so they don't want to do it. So then they'll cut it down, but then they'll always be miserable that it's cut down. And then naturally, they're going to be criticizing everybody else, right? That they have something bigger and this and that. And why don't you cut down? I cut down. Yeah, but you weren't supposed to cut down. Otherwise, you wouldn't be talking about it, right? In other words, if they're talking about it, it's an issue. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, the people on the Upper West Side aren't talking about it. You know, when they go to something bigger, yeah, but it's just, I mean, of course, the lift in the building is supposed to end in your apartment. You know, otherwise, you know, you have to get out your keys. It's a whole trip, you know, like that. So, of course, it's supposed to end there. You know, you're going to guess you're going to have to, and then they don't know which door, you know, like that. It's supposed to end there. It's just normal, right? Yeah, so it's like, yeah. Okay. Yes.
But it's normal when you live in the same environment. But like here, you live and people are so conditioned in differently, in different ways, so you find yourself comfortable, but not normally comfortable.
Not like normally comfortable.
If you means, everybody wear the same.
Means like you have a maid from Kharagpur that if you were in the West, there would be no question you'd have one. That kind of. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so that's what I'm saying. Everybody here in Mayapur is taking it normal that you have maids. Anybody here, okay. There are people here in this room that if they were living in the West, they might have maids. But most people would not. If you take who's here in Mayapur, I can guarantee you about 98-99% would not. But it's normal to have maids. You know, everybody has one. Some have two. Some have them cook for them. You know what I'm saying? So the point is we've established our own culture of what's normal. Because what I said, what's normal is go that way. You know? And the buildings that aren't made out of brick, that's normal for here. You know what I'm saying? That's normal. Having a tube well, having a house with grass on it and chetai, that's normal. Are you saying? Means in 83, when they built the original, the first Gurukul when it moved out to the Goshala, it was all grass huts and chetai walls and everything like that. And they were big. They may have been almost as big as the footprint of this building. First ones were huge. And so the local manager was so happy with them that they offered any grihastha wanted, they'll give them an acre of land with a house like that on it, and they'll have their hand pump, the toilet, the cow, like that. Not one grihastha would take it. Not one. It was a riot that it was even offered that you would expect us to live like that. And that was 83. You know, that was only, 2 years after kind of being a bit of renunciate was kind of normal, where that dropped off. You know, so we were that close. Right? Now it's that, there's a good chance that what most people are living in, the square footage they're living in here, they wouldn't be living in that in the West. You know? I mean, in New York, this place here in the floor that's there, that's over $1,000 a month. Just what's on the floor there, that lower place. You know? So how many people are living in what size we have here? You know? Marble floors? Who's had marble floors in the West? Who's had it? You know what I'm saying? Actually, solid wood doors and windows? You know, everybody's got, these, particle boards and other things like that. It's all limitation. You know what I'm saying? Wearing silk clothes. Who wears silk clothes in the West? Right? I mean, I remember seeing one guy, I forget where it was. Yeah, it was like on somewhere, around like on Lexington or something like that. There was this guy, he was wearing green silk pants. Like that, you know? But who wears silk? You know what I'm saying? It's normal here. Now it's just standard. Chiffon silk, standard now. You go back 5 years, it wasn't. People didn't even know they existed. You know what I'm saying? So the point is the Vedic culture doesn't have a problem with having all nice things. Nanda Baba's living out in a forest, right? But he's living in a marble palace, and everybody's got lots of stuff. The Vedic doesn't have a problem with that. So the natural things aren't considered luxurious. A marble floor is not means we look at it as luxurious. Why? Because the Malecha doesn't have any concept of purity, right? But now the upper class, or the wealthy class, does have a concept of clean, not pure, but clean. So therefore, marble you can keep very clean. And they like the idea of aesthetically things are clean. So therefore the marble gives that very formal kind of thing. So you only see marble in very wealthy people's houses. But stone before is just because it's pure. That's why we use it. We use stone because it's pure. It's more pure than gold. But most devotees will look at it, they don't know that. They just think it's luxurious. It's available, I can get it, so I get it. You know what I'm saying? You pay, you know, so many hundreds per square foot for like really white, you know, marble or something. That you can say is luxurious. But if you're just going for the regular kind of gray stuff, the standard stuff, that's just, it's just pure. That's why we use it. Does that make sense? That's why in India it's used. Does that make sense? So there is the standard of, you know, the silk is pure. Synthetic is not nice. It's impure. Plus, synthetic, it's like, you know, fireworks, you know. Touches anything in fire and you're immediately, you know, one of the, you know, Christian, and not Christian, Roman, you know, ideals of what you do with Christians, you know. It's just, you know, it's not, means like in the school, we have a rule. No one can wear synthetics. They just can't. It's not allowed. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's silk or it's cotton. Does that make sense? Just because it's not real. So in other words, if it's real, it's not actually luxurious. Does that make sense? But it has that, because it goes, it's real, because it's stuff you can offer to Krishna, use nicely for Krishna and everything like that. So there's also the mentality. You know what I'm saying? So you have... The point is that each one for his position has to balance all this. You know? Because it's different for, and most live above their means what it would be in the West. Because it's 1/10 the cost here as it is in the West, so naturally they spend more. You know what I'm saying? Whatever you spend here per year is basically almost what you spend a month if you're in the West. You know? That makes sense. Maybe 2 months, depending upon the individual. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's just making what works that you're comfortable, like we said. Like Prabhupada, the original devotees who were here, they did live in a grass hut. You know, it's next to the front gate. Gorni Thai lived in it in the 24-hour kirtan. That was the place. Right? The only difference is now that did they have wooden pillars before? I think it was bamboo, then they changed to wooden pillars, right? And they knocked themselves out, right? But it's still the same structure and everything, basically. So then, because Western devotees were having trouble, Prabhupada built the boundary wall and the long building. So that there was some place more pukka to stay. I think boundary wall was built, long building was built. You know, maybe you don't know long building. I mean, it's obvious long building. What's it called now? That's chakra, yeah. I just noticed long building. That's because that's what it was. It was at the time, I think, the longest building in West Bengal. Right? So it was long building. So that was there, but then that had the common bathrooms and everything like that. And devotees stayed in it, you know, Gaur Purnima festival. And then 7 devotees packed into one of those rooms. And everybody was happy, you know. It was, you know, like that. But with time, then you have to make, you know, the lotus building, that was for all the guests or the GBC, and that would stay there and stuff, you know. So, but with time, that's just the norm now. You know, I haven't seen, but someone was telling me you go into some of the houses back this side, you know, from a certain, how you say, more northerly, ethnic background, and they say it's like walking into that area if you were in the West. The houses, this, that, there's no concept that you're in India. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the point is as long as it works, that then having done that, now you think about Krishna and don't think about your facility, then it's okay. But if you're still thinking about the facility, proud about the facility, and you know, have host programs because you want to show off your facility, then that's not what he's done. Then that's passionate. But this passionate is you're able to create it without losing your Krishna consciousness. You're able to live in it and be Krishna conscious. Then it's okay. You know what I'm saying? But the point is like people come to the Gurukul here, and they like to look at it, but name the Grihastha who'd live here. You understand? It's not one. Send the kids, because they're kids. But as soon as they become Grihasthas, they don't live here. But if you check the other Gurukul, it's a little bit different. Do you understand? Because you're dealing with the Grihastha element. Right? The boys means this is getting pretty fancy. You have blankets on the floor. Right? You check that side, they got mattresses and pillows and covers and... You understand? Because that's the element. So here it's like this, but it's... You know what I'm saying? That's the fun, is that no Grihastha live here because they want their own little bathroom. But it's like, it's rare I ever used a bathroom that when you're drying yourself with your gumsha, that you actually can be relaxed. I always have to take the end of the gumsha and actually take the ends that stick out, right? Because you can't get right at the end. And I have to fold them in so that when I dry, I don't hit the walls. And people somehow think that's more luxurious than here, where I have that much space, how much space someone lives in as bathroom space. You know what I'm saying? And fancy, penthouse suites is that they have the things where doors open out onto gardens or the roof opens out to the sky. We're living in a garden. That is our bathroom, you know? It's like, you know. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's so high-end, people can't relate to it. You know? The idea is only something should be that high end, and everybody else should be a little down. But here, the whole thing, you know. Does that make sense? So the point is I would say this is luxurious, and what everybody else lives in, I have yet to be impressed. As far as the bathroom goes, you know, living rooms people apparently do pretty good, but bathrooms, I'm not impressed. You know, your traditional high end Indian bathrooms, no, I've seen impressive ones of those. You know, the size, the cleanness, the purity, all that kind of thing. You know, everybody loves sink, toilet, shower, right? That's standard, right? Because you walk in, you either wash your hands or you come in to pee, right? And then occasionally you go to the shower, right? So therefore you put it in the order of use, right? But that means when I come out of the shower, I walk in front of the toilet, my feet are dirty. And now I walk around my whole nice house. My whole house is dirty, so it doesn't matter you have a marble floor. You got a dirty house, right? But the traditional one is sink, shower, toilet. Because when you walk out of the toilet, then you're going to do this weird thing called washing your feet. And they even have taps that can do that. And then, after that, wash hands and then walk out. No, you just don't see them built like this. Like, if they have a preference, it'll always be sink, toilet, shower. But in the high class, it would always be sink, shower, toilet. So little things like that, that's the difference. That's what makes it comfortable or not. So when we say comfortable, it means it's comfortable for the devotees, but they don't understand it's not actually the standard. Does that make sense? But the point is, they're comfortable at it, and you see them there at Mangalartik in the program, and they're taking part, so that means it's comfortable. So it works. Does that make sense? But luxurious is something, different. Does that make sense? Yes. I have no idea. You have to talk to the local management, but I think you have. Like that. Unless you're wealthy enough to buy yourself a big enough piece of land, you plant trees, make a nice big wall, plant trees all around, and put a grass hut in the middle. Then you're doing okay. But, you know. So here, this dispassionate, conduct dispassionate, and with detachment means this. Dispassionate means it's not for ourselves. Detachment means the results for Krishna. So it's just bringing out both of these, because the detachment means it's for Krishna, and the non-passionate means it's for Krishna, but just to make sure from both angles. Because this passion means that the Abhideya, that I'm performing it with the idea for my results. And detachment means when the results come, that it's not for me. So it's just use both the Abhideya and the Prayojana to make sure it's appreciated. Right? But that's social dealings. Because in one's private dealings, then one can live how one likes. Right? Here, fortunately, Prabhupada's so kind that the Mayapur project is such, one can be inside and basically not have to deal with outside at all. So you don't have a social scene. You may be dealing outside, but there's no social scene. You know what I'm saying? But for the Indians, there is a local social scene. Right, so they have to worry about those things. But it's so nice, you're inside, you don't never have to go out, basically. Well, even other places like Vrindavan, it's such a, everything's scattered all over. You're not inside all the time. You know, does that make sense? So no other project really has this kind of an appeal. So it's very, very special. So we miss out on that. We don't have to see. But if one was in India back some years, you couldn't function without interacting with the local scene. You had to know the etiquette. You had to know how to deal. You had to know all these things, how to live. You know? So you did it because one is that we would follow what's the Vaishnav standards. You know, because we weren't doing karmakandya yagyas and stuff like that. But the point is what the smartas do as just normal day-to-day life and what the Vaishnavs do as normal day-to-day life is the same. In other words, it's the Vaishnav standard of living that the smartas have. The Shastra's recommending the Vaishnav way of life. But because people aren't satisfied just with the Vaishnav way of life, therefore then extra things are added on to that. Right, but we tend to think that extra added on, that's normal, and the Vaishnava way of life is the different thing. But it's actually the Vaishnava way of life is the normal universal lifestyle. And then if they're karmis, you add this on. They're jnanis, you add that on. They're yogis, you add this on. Does that make sense? So is that okay? So in other words, the dispassionate means you're performing the activity without a desire for the result for yourself. In other words, why should you be comfortable? So that you can do service. But if you're always thinking about being comfortable, then that's more than what you require. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, it's comfortable, so it's normal. That's what he said. It's not uncomfortable. That's how you say. You're not uncomfortable. So that's the idea the Gurukul teaches, that you get by with these things. You're comfortable. You don't need something elaborate to be not uncomfortable. Like that. Then, because you've grown up like that, then when you get into the grahastha life, it'll expand, but it won't expand so much. Or even if the facilities come easily or naturally, but you'll be able to work with them in a less passionate kind of environment. You know what I'm saying? Because You know, you've grown up with everything very simple. Does that work? Yeah? Is that okay?
I was just at the home of a man, three stories, huge home. And when I walked in there, and I was thinking, how much time does he have to spend to maintain it? Or, natural thought, maybe it's because I don't have that standard. It's like, how many books could be distributed if he didn't put the fourth floor on?
That's there. But then you could say that how many books could be distributed if you used a bamboo wall instead of a brick one? Yes. You know, how much money would be saved if you used a kerosene lantern instead of electricity or a fan? So that's the problem is once one gets into that, one shouldn't use that, because the point is they're the grihastha, it's their money, it's their life. So in one's own life, one would think, okay, up to this limit, it's comfortable, I'm okay. Beyond that, then, of course, I could do more Krishna-conscious things. Because then the problem comes is, who sets the standard? Then if it's going to be setting the standard, then we have to look at something that's traditional.
Well, I think some people might think, well, Prabhupada wanted us to simplify, so the standard with which I was raised was much higher, and now I'm a devotee, I should live that way, even though I feel uncomfortable living the other way. So I feel guilty. I'm living what seems to be extravagant. I don't feel it's extravagant, but there's this one side of me saying, no, Prabhupada would say this is extravagant.
Because the point is all these things are simply secondary. The primary is that you're absorbed in Krishna. So whatever it takes to be absorbed in Krishna, that's what one should do. So the point is one wants to get to the point of Akinchana Gochara, that there's nothing is ours. But it doesn't matter whether it's a lot of stuff is nothing is ours, or a little stuff is nothing is ours. Because in any case, even once, you know, you see that whole drama that sadhu, you know, his kopins and the mouse. Mm-hmm. Right? So in the beginning, then, you know, it was extravagant. But then after going through what's really extravagant, then, no, the mouse and the copan are fine, right? You know, they're great, you know. They're all great friends now. You know, so it's just a matter of, with time, that same house that seemed so important and so wonderful and so much of a support at maybe today in their Krishna consciousness, give it some more days, and it'll be a burden, you know? So the point is that, and for yourself, you've made it's a burden now, but later it won't be, you know, because you adjust. So it's just a matter of when one learns and whether one's using more of the poison in the beginning, nectar at the end, or nectar in the beginning and poison at the end, you know, whichever you like. So the point is, yeah, you could do for ourselves, I wouldn't do that, but the same time as we don't bother the other ones, because, you know, unless there's some, we have a natural relationship that we could point it out or something like that, you know, because you do have the thing as he puts a fourth floor on there, and then they can get rent off of it or something, or, you know, stuff like that. And then he can maintain himself so he can spend more time doing service. Or, you know, later when, you know, vanaprasthas, they don't have to worry about it. They can be full-time. So you have different things how you can look at it. It's just what's the motive for it. So someone may set up a whole thing so that he can have, he has a facility to set it up so he can be completely free. But someone else has set it up as a prestige thing, everybody else is doing it, all their other friends are doing it, they get more money, they have the car, they have the this, they have the that, and they think they're living it up. And so that is excess. That is excess. That is excess. But if it's within the range of the kind of, yeah, you'd have to be saying, because generally, your question is middle class will come into middle class. It's when you're talking about upper class coming down or the lower class coming up. That's where you have more questions. You know, like that. Yeah. Because most just work in that. But
isn't it more of a problem when the lower class is going up?
Yeah, of course. Because then you're increasing desires. But the problem is because others are doing it, it just naturally happens, you know, because we're not functioning on a get money, build flats, and who wants to do full-time service can take advantage. It's who has money, you can buy stuff, you can stay here. If you don't have money, we're sorry. So naturally, it's going to create that, you know, commercial environment in which therefore everybody moves up. I'm not sure what kind of upwardly mobile. Definitely not necessarily the yuppie, but. So all these things are there, but ultimately they can only be brought into balance when Krishna consciousness is the primary, and that's taken that way. Because I was just discussing yesterday with one devotee that one of the most difficult things I've found in going through these courses the last so many years is the understanding of that, how do you say, there's such a thing as what's primary and what's secondary. And the two can't function without the other. The primary can't be manifest without the secondary, and the secondary has no meaning without the primary. This goes back to Krishna. You won't appreciate Krishna's qualities unless there's a manifestation. And the manifestation has no meaning without Krishna himself, his qualities. So the masculine and feminine principle is rooted in Radha and Krishna. So that's just there. So the primary and secondary, you can't separate them, but you can identify the difference, and their functions are different. Their utilities are different, though you can't separate them. So then you have two, basically it breaks down to two kind of perspectives. One is that since it's secondary, it's not so important, so we can get rid of it. And then you're left with a vacuum. There is no culture, there is no support. Or because it's important, it becomes actually primary in their focus. And the Krishna conscious get locked. Then you get, you know, the fanatics, the kind of like the more smarta kind of, you know, the pro-Vedic, you know, all that kind of stuff. So then, but both have missed the point. It's so easy. It's dwait or it's advait. But the dwait, advait, and simultaneously, that's the hard part, the overlap. So is that, in other words, it's the Krishna consciousness that's important, but because of the support of these secondary activities of family life and the facilities for that, that's why they can be absorbed, right? So they're necessary, but at the same time, getting that balance, that's the problem. So if you walk into the place and it seems incongruous with, you know, the environment and the person that you're dealing with, then that means that the balance is not right. But the actual problem is not the money. The actual problem is the lack of Krishna consciousness. Because the money is not really the problem. It means if we have money, we'll use it in Krishna's service. So it's the Krishna consciousness that's the problem. You know? Because there's so many things you could do with that money. You could do with books, or you could do, you know, buy a bus, or you could, you know, expand something in the temple, or make a bigger prasad distribution facility, or, you know, bigger ashram. You could do all kinds of things with it. So if the balance is there, you see the primary is Krishna conscious, so therefore you create facility that supports that. So that's where the imbalance is. It's not actually that more money's been spent, because sometimes we spend a lot of money on stuff. But it works. It attracts. Like this, you know, the building we're building here, that's a lot of money. But once it's built, you'll see the whole of India will come. Because it's such a big building. Just for that reason. You know? White people built a big building out in the middle of a bunch of paddy fields. Well, it used to be a bunch of paddy fields. You know? And what's going on? And they'll come from all over to see it. So it works. But if you build something like that in the West, it's, you know, hey, you know, Smithsonian's that big also, but nobody cares. You know? So it won't have the effect. So there you do something different. So it is incongruous, but the real problem is the Krishna conscious. So what's happening is you're taking the Krishna conscious element for granted. But others don't. They take their need for their facilities as for granted, like that. So the real point is the Krishna consciousness is the weak point. Because then they have that now, it's built now, okay, then do like that. Then like you say, then in being Krishna, maybe there isn't a reason to put the fourth floor on. Or in actually being Krishna conscious, put less into my flat now, I was going to do so many other things, you know, inlay the marble floors with marble. I won't do that, I'll build the fourth floor. You know? Does that make sense? So it's...
I have another related question.
Okay.
Two parts. So I was at his house, his son was taking me home, and I got to talking about what their business is. And their business is plastics, manufacturing plastic bags, which is obviously not something in line with an ecological sense of Krishna consciousness. So that's one aspect. And then you mentioned, you know, the acre of land, the cow, and how nobody wants to do that. And how Prabhupada talked about it so much and his vision for that. So could you speak a little bit about that? Are we eventually meant to gradually over the years tweak everybody's brain so that they can do that? And everything we do, every penny we make is aligned with a, you know, satvagun? Or is it okay not to, because that's just how we are and we have to accept that? Or a little of both?
I would say a little of both, in that the first generation is kind of like that. But when you get to the third and fourth, you won't have to do the tweaking. They're automatically pious, you know, like that. So that's it. Also, you have the element of the urban and the rural. So the rural is the most natural, where you can have that kind of lifestyle. But the problem is due to the... means it's also cultural. Because the point is Nandamarba lived in a rural environment, but they lived very nicely in that rural environment. But it wasn't a suburb. They were actually dependent upon that rural environment. So the difficulty is that we're not actually suited urban people, and we're not actually suited rural people. We're not sophisticated enough to live in the rural environment in a high-class way. But at the same time, we're not sophisticated enough to live in an urban environment in an actual proper Krishna conscious way. So it basically just boils down to lack of training and culture. Because in either one of them, the element is that either you do have that simplicity, or means simplicity meaning from lack of sophistication, or you have that simplicity from being sophisticated. See, the problem is you know, it's like when you look in the magazine and they're showing off the different rooms, you have that one kind that is clean. It's just, you know, the big thing like that, there's the couch, the table, the fireplace, a couple of lamps, that's it. And it looks really balanced. Then you have the other one, it looks like half of, you know, Canal Street is inside that room. You know, but all very nicely placed and all the little things. There's a million things there like that. So the problem is getting to that first one. Because it's so sophisticated and so practical, it's become so simple. Then you can actually relate to the simplicity of the Vedic culture. That is so high class, but it's so simple. Because generally we take simple to mean simpleton. And I would say that's the general definition of most devotees in the movement. You know, who are in a position to actually have effect what you're talking about. Simple means simpleton. But no, it's simple means it's sophisticated. Like you see, the Brahmins are living that lifestyle, that simpler lifestyle, but it's so far more sophisticated that there's rare you find a devotee who can actually relate to it. Like we were mentioning the other day, it's a pretty much a standard in your, you know, it means it's like in India, have like four levels of Brahmins. So when you're talking about that top level, it's a very common thing is that you go in the bathroom. The bathroom's set up properly so that you don't contaminate yourself after using the toilet. Then you clean, you wash yourself, but then you're clean now, you're not contaminated, but you're not considered pure. So they go out of there, and then there's another place just outside the bathroom where you have to wash again, because that's the washing that's in the house. The other one's the washing in the bathroom. So, you know, We're complaining that devotees that have an allergy to washing their feet after using the toilet. That's the first one, let alone that there's two levels of it, you know. But that's simple. And it may just be it's a bucket there with a ladle in it so that they can wash their feet, but the floor is built to like that. So that's simple. But that means it was planned. You planned it for cleanliness. So a Brahmin plans his house. He plans what's clean. That's the first thing. What's clean? And how to set it up for puja, how to set it up for Vaishnava association, prasad distribution, how to set up your living space, your toilets and that they're out of the way, don't disturb those. They look at it like that. It's a different perspective. But it is, you know, as sophisticated or more than your Western urban environment. In other words, you have to get into the upper class to get that sophistication. But it doesn't have the wealth. Because in the West, sophistication and wealth go together. While in India, sophistication and culture, they go together. Wealth's a separate thing. So you can be very sophisticated and very cultured, but live very simply. So that would be, I would say, is the point that the devotees aren't catching. Because you do, when we talk Varnashram, and then immediately the idea of farm comes up, that's important, because it means without farms you don't eat. But we do have to remember that most of the stories, except for the ones in Vrindavan that we always hear about, are taking place in the city. Dwarka is a city. Mathura is a city. Hastinapur is a city. Indraprastha is a city. So there is Vedic urban life, but we don't live Vedic urban life, just as we don't live Vedic rural life. We only know how to live basically Western, you know, some kind of middle or lower middle class, you know, urban kind of on the edge life. But it's not actually culture. So the main point that's lacking, you could say, is culture. You know? Like that. And as one Australian, he once asked me if I knew the difference between an Australian and yogurt. Right? It's culture.
The only culture in Australia is in the yogurt.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So that's it. And even that, right? The yogurt's for puftas, you know. You know, so it's like, so no culture. No, that's Australian, you know. You know, true blue ochre, you know. So yeah. So the problem comes is just. But it, with time, by Krishna consciousness, we become more culture and everything like that. We develop the finer things, but it may be kind of late, especially for the first generation. They may be able to do it, but they may not. But the second will be a little closer, but you'll find with third, fourth, that'll be pretty normal for them. Depends on the training, of course, you know. But if the training is right, you'll see that for them, it's just normal. They don't have so much problem with it. So they'll be able to balance these things much easier like that. So that's what we're working on like that. It means, in other words, you do your best. In other words, if the first generation simply can somehow or another be Krishna conscious, they'll go back to Godhead because the secondary elements are secondary. So even if they're not ideal, the one advantage is that because they're not ideal, they drive you so nuts that you are willing to be Krishna conscious, you know, like that. You know, that's generally the thing. It's not so comfortable, not so pleasant. With the other generation, they can live in that more sophisticated environment, you know, that's more simple, and be more Krishna conscious and be able to use the more natural stuff and things like that. You know? So it's just time. But the point is, what you're saying is, if you don't know it, in other words, everybody should know what the standard is, and then you get as close as you can, because it is secondary. But the point is when the secondary becomes more prominent, either, you know, too Vedic or too non-Vedic, then the person gets distracted. You know, at least the advantage of the too Vedic is at least they're doing that because that's what's recommended. So they have that advantage over the person who's just being non-Vedic, being practical. Because then it's simply whim. It's a social custom. It's not actually a Shastric. There's no praman. There's no basis for their position. Right. So one is at least taking the position as the mode of goodness, but it's not pure goodness. And the other one is a mode of ignorance. So goodness is always better than ignorance. So therefore, it's a better position. So someone trying to do that is better than the one that's not even making any effort. You know, it's just, you know, it mentions out of unlimited living entities that a few are human, and of those who are human, a few are following the Vedic culture, and of those, then a few actually are you know trying to. You know, gain that proper knowledge and that, and then of those, a few are you know actually understanding it. A few of those are endeavoring for getting out of the material energy, and of those, only a few have made it, and of millions of those, only a few are interested in Krishna consciousness. So the devotees are in the best situation, but by conditioning somehow or another, they let that conditioning get the best of them. But there's so much, even if they do have all these material facilities and it's out of balance, they're still way better situated than someone who's not a devotee, who does have it in balance, like that. So ultimately it's that, because the secondary isn't the primary consideration of success. But because of conditioning, it has a very major influence. That's the thing, because we're conditioned to the secondary, not to the primary. If we were conditioned to Krishna consciousness, it would be called constitutional. right? But we're conditioned to the naimittic, what's not, the temporary. So because we emphasize it so much, it does distract our attention, and therefore it inhibits our Krishna consciousness. It means people could, it's like you're saying here in Mayapur, one could take so much more advantage. It is the dawn. Everything's 1,000 times greater. You know, so the advantages that one can gain here, but nobody takes so much advantage of it. You know, it's not in other words, how much advantage could be taken is not necessarily. Individuals may, but as a whole, it's just, you know, we're living here, we could be living in Bombay, we could be living anywhere. You know? Does that work a little better? Or?
Yeah, then I think you answered this, but just to be more specific.
Oh, about the plastic.
The occupation.
The occupation is, it means, in other words, if it's sinful, you would try to make adjustment with it, like that.
But I'm finding because I travel a lot, it doesn't even seem there's a consciousness.
No, there's not.
That I'm doing this, and this is totally destroying the earth, or it's totally...
But why is it a bad thing to destroy the earth? What's the actual reason? Because like we were saying before, what's the reason that the problem if he's overspent or overdone? It's the lack of Krishna consciousness. So the problem with destroying the earth is not that the earth in a moment can fix herself. She's more powerful. So like Prabhupada mentioned, I think about the nuclear fallout. I think it was Ramachandra was overly worried about what do we do about that? You have to, get rid of the top 3 feet of dirt, this, that, so many things. And Prabhupada says that, if she wants, she can get rid of it in a moment. But the point is because you've been a bad boy, that's why she leaves it there for the next 10,000 years, that's why, you're not supposed to do that, it's because before Arjuna uses nuclear weapons and there wasn't a problem of fallout because they're using them properly. So, but the point is that that's not how Krishna likes you to deal with the earth. Right? She's not how you're supposed to deal. You're supposed to deal in a way is that there's the natural environment, there's the natural laws, and he made the laws. So doing these unnatural things that are against his laws, that's the problem. So we as an individual, if something comes along that we would use, okay, it's plastic, but it can be used nicely in Krishna's service, we'll use it. And like Prabhupada thought the plastic shoes were a nice improvement over the leather ones. So it's there, it improves that, But at the same time is if you have a choice, then why choose something like that? Okay, you weren't a devotee, now you're a devotee, so is there any adjustment you can do? Can you transform this into something else, or it's too late? Or so if you can, you'd make that adjustment. If it's not, then you just see that nicely money's being used in Krishna's service, otherwise the reactions from it are great. So you make sure you're supporting, the preaching and everything nicely. But Prabhupada would make the distinction. Like in Africa, you went to that one family and their business was alcohol. So they gave a big donation. So, but he didn't put it into his account, that we normally do. That we use like for the Vrindavan Mayapur and all that kind of thing. He put it in the hundi. He just gave it directly to the deities because it carries too much karma. So there is that consideration. But the difficulty in that's happening, it's a bigger picture, is that when we're talking about congregational preaching, there's no concept of training the congregation in what is Vaishnava lifestyle, because the lifestyle is not known. Point is congregation means you live on your own, take care of yourself. Temple means you live in the temple and the temple takes care of you because you're doing full-time service for the temple. So the lifestyle, the concepts, everything are the same. The differences come is that we try to make it a difference. Either we can't see that or political reason, whatever it may be, that the community is something else. The temple's kind of the fanatic thing, now we're being the broad and the realistic. And no, it's personal lifestyle is the same. It's just a matter of who makes the money and who manages the money. That's all. That's the only difference. And because you're making and managing money, the amount of time that 8 hours a day you're making money, if you're doing full-time service, that 8 hours would be doing in the temple or that kind of preaching. But they're not, so that comes out of it. So for them, the Krishna conscious direct service is the sadhana. Like that. So, but it's not seen that that's what you're dealing with. So then train them, you know, what is Krishna conscious? What are the standards? How to live in the house and this and that. But most people don't know it, even though Prabhupada taught it. Like it means, I remember one of the first things you learned when you moved into the temple was after you go to the toilet, you wash your hands, mouth, and feet. It was just standard. But now I'm sure that there's thousands of devotees who have joined who have never even heard this. How would that be? If one is living Brahminical culture, how can you tolerate it? How could you not allow it? So that's the thing, is that if the preachers have that culture, then everybody else will. But if the preachers don't have it, then it won't go. So therefore, it's up to the preachers. Then they cultivate their own. Like I remember, like in Calcutta, then you have your life membership makers. And you have different kinds of life membership makers. You have those who are, you know, by conditioning would be more towards the business kind of direction, you know, and functioning that way. And those who would be working more towards the preaching. Rarely you get the preaching one. But if you did, he was always the best. He'd make more members than anybody else. Why? Because the businessman, unless you're as good or better than them, they don't respect you for that. Like Gargamuni, the members in Calcutta loved him because he said, he's one of us. He's a Marwari, you know. And in fact, he's even better at it than us because he can do tricks that they haven't even thought of, you know, like that. You know, they go into the guy's office and he's not giving the money. So he just decided, okay, we're just staying here. We're doing a satyagraha. We're just fasting until death right here in your office. Like that. The guy's, you know, money would come out, you know. It's just, it would just happen. Or guy, oh no, but you know, I can't get, you know, this, that. There's no money and this and that. And this month, and he says, you know, you're looking in the wrong drawer. Look at the next one down. The guy, oh, okay. I'll have the cash, you know, like that. So, you know, it's like he knew all the tricks. You know, the guy comes to him and saying this and that and this and that and complaining this and that and so many things. And Gargamuni's explaining how it was going on because he hasn't quite understood we're a temple, you know, not like a club, you know, like you join Diners Club or something. And to the point where he actually takes his shirt, rips it off, and throws it on the ground, you know, in front of the guy and says, so, you know, you want the shirt off my back? And the guy, oh, okay. He caught it, you know. He knew how to get through to them. So they really respected him that. But otherwise, most, then it's like, because you're a preacher, you're a sadhu, then they like that. So then you'd see these ones where the life membership maker was a preacher. They come to the temple and they're devotees. You know, they chant, they read, they come to the temple and they want to do service. They come, the devotees are sitting, so to them they're sadhus and we're grihasthas, so they serve prasad. But the ones made by the more businessy kind of, they think, you know, we're here, we're the club, the sadhus are supposed to serve us. So they sit down, they own the place, and like, so you can really tell the difference. So that's the point, is that it depends on the realization of the preachers, then that's what can be given to the community. So the point is that culture. Because I've gone places where, you know, everybody learns how to dress, they learn how to cook, they learn, but it's the preacher that does it. You go to other places, they wouldn't have a clue. Like that. So it depends on the preacher. So that's the idea, is that Prabhupada wanted a standard of Brahminical culture. And so, but that Brahminical culture is such that you could apply it anywhere. You know, so whether he was dealing with that, you know, like that crazy kid, you know, that wanted the 25 cents for the gasoline, you know, or he was dealing with, you know, like Giriraj Maharaj and that, you know, from a very wealthy family, it wasn't a problem for him. Everybody was engaged. Everybody was comfortable. And the thing is because of that, could get it across, and you generally find is those from that level are willing to move down. The ones in the middle, they were never conscious of it. See, this is the difference. The middle class isn't really conscious of their culture. All they know is that they're supposed to have a house and a car and a few things like that. They're not actually conscious of what it means and what are standards. Well, your upper class is conscious of that because that's what it means. That's what sets them apart, is they're actually conscious of everything. Though materialistic, but they're actually fully conscious of where they, what they're living in, how they're maintaining it. They're everything. The other guys is just, you know, as long as the pizza box is, you know, I mean, it definitely can't be on the couch. You know, if it's on the coffee table, that's not so good. You know, it shouldn't have been there, you know, because you came over. But as long as it wasn't on the couch, because if you come in, they'll move it from there to on the table. Right? You know, like that. Like that. You know, some of them might, if they have a moment that you won't see it, then they'll throw it behind the couch. But that's only if you can't see it. You understand? But the whole point is that upper class, at any time, they know who can come at what time, and so they know that the place is always perfect. And if they're going to have, it's already planned way beforehand. It's all these things, it's very regular. So, therefore, they're aware of this and aware that, okay, therefore, I can choose this kind of lifestyle and this and that. So, that's the advantage of that, if one can catch that. The other is that if one finds living that simpler, that philosophical element is a problem, then they have to have those facilities. And sometimes, by that lifestyle, they get, you know, can be still quite distracted. So, the general thing is, and generally if you're coming from a lower economic background, they're a little more conscious, but only because of the economic element. Like that. But the middle class, generally the tendency is they're you know, you can say their shining attribute is they're not actually very conscious. You know, that's kind of the outstanding, you know, that's why they all kind of get along, because they're all, nobody's really too conscious. You know, you're conscious enough, but not too conscious. You know, so the upper is very conscious, so they woo, but it can get a little artificial. And the lower one, they're very conscious, so if you say the wrong word, you can get shot. You know, so you kind of got to, you know. Does that make sense? So that's why the two ends are actually easier to deal with than the middle. The middle is easy to deal with in that they're pleasant, but to actually move it forward, they're the hardest group to move. But the top and the bottom are easier because they're so much more conscious. Like that. You know, but one is more cultured, but then it's more too formal, and the other one is not, but then the emotions, the personal is very strong, but at the same time, the regulation and all that's difficult. You know, the middle kind of is there, they understand the need of regulation, not too much, not too little, and everything, you know, so they're good in that way for just kind of going along. Is that... So in other words, what you understand, that's what you give. And don't worry about the other ones, because you can't. With all that time, you could be worrying about your own preaching. So you just don't worry about it. If there's an opportunity, you can worry and do something, you do. But if not, don't worry about it. Because the point is from one point, the whole thing, all it takes is one tree and the whole forest can be burnt down, or one tree and the whole forest smells good. So, you know, one book is left on the planet, it can start the whole movement again. You know, one person, it can start the whole movement. You know, so, therefore, you do what you can. Is that, will that work? Or?
Depends the way you do it, who you do it to.
That's there. Then that's the point. You choose your field. The preacher means he chooses his field where you'll be more effective. Means you can go, means even though Shastras doesn't recommend it, you could cross the, you know, the Atlantic, but it may not have as much effect. You know? So you choose where it is for what your conditioning, what areas you're comfortable in that deal with people in that same kind of conditioning that you'd be able to relate to, and they'd relate to what you're saying. So wherever you can find that, that's where you deal. You know, that's the point. Because Lord Chaitanya is in Bengal, but wasn't getting much effect. So he went outside of Bengal, got good effect. But, you know, he sent Nityananda back because he could get the effect.
So let's say someone is working to establish one ashram, putting out tons and tons and tons of energy and getting very little result.
Right.
Is that intelligent, or is that because it's dharmic?
Point is, if it's his duty, he's doing, but he has to find that audience that it works. Because it generally also is that you could also say, you do have that, but you also have presentation. Because as I mentioned, most means in the Vedic culture, the urban environment's not a problem. And basically, you could say most all your devotees are urban. Even if they live on the farm, it's actually a suburb. It's not a farm. You know? Like that. So, So because of that, the point is Varnashram is performing your prescribed duties. So you don't have to be, or how are they understanding Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas? How are they understanding, you know, Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Brahman? That's the universal. Now, whether it's in a urban environment or a rural environment, that's a secondary detail. The universal principle is how they understand that. So the difficulty is most who approach Varnashram approach it as farming exclusively. But the point is what about kings? What about Brahmins? Is that not Varnashram? You know, what about establishing proper cleanliness standards and the deity worship and everything like that? You know, what about standards of prasad service? You know, how devotees dress, how they, you know, maintain, how they, you know, what they do, these kind of things. And then administrative, what does the Shastra recommend in administration? You know, because Prabhupada says, he talks about books that deal with administration. But those aren't the basis of discussion. It'll be some, you know, guy who wrote a book, you know. It's not based on what the Shastra says. And so then it's not Varnashram. But we target that it's just, and then what about a Shudra? That he does his work nicely. Most devotees in the movement as occupations are Shudras. Right? So do they know how to be a good Shudra? Because the point is, you're a good Shudra, you move up, you make money. They keep you, right? When they downsize, they keep you. Right? They get rid of the other guys. Because if you're a good Shudra, no Vaishya gets rid of a good Shudra. He gets rid of all the guys that aren't, you know, it means in other words, this group makes a lot of profit, this group makes a little profit, but if there's some problem there, I get rid of this one because that whole section's not so profitable. So the point of you're a good Shudra, they keep you. But how many devotees know what a good Shudra is? But the Shastra says, you have that service attitude. You deal properly with the person. You deal properly with anything connected with the person. That means, you know, his family, all the other people in the office. You deal nicely with them. The guy who's always the guy who's lazy, the guy who's fighting with everybody, that's not the one you keep. You know, he works there. He understands what the company's for. That means you have to actually put in some effort to know, what's this company for? What's it trying to do? So what's the attitude of? You do that and catch that, and you show that, not only will you be kept, you'll probably become the supervisor or the manager. So that's what it said, that's how it should have said. How many people talk about that? That's Varnashram, directly 100% Varnashram. That's not mentioned. It's simply about, you know, whether you grow, you know, this kind of carrot or that kind of potato. You know, it's like, you know, nice. But the thing is how many of those who are talking, even farming, are doing it? They establish a farm, but are they there? No. You know, it ends up leaving a few people there and nobody's there.
They're in the city doing business.
Right. So that's the whole point, you know, to support that. You know, but it's supposed to be the other way around, you know. So, but the point is, it's nice, but you start with Varnashram by the culture. The culture will automatically bring out the rural. Because now, let us say, I have a temple council. Okay? Only because that's the popular thing. And even if I have a temple president, whatever, I have a temple authority. And the temple has farm, right? Because they'll divide this farm, there's temple, there's this, there's that. Okay. Now, what do you plant and when? Who decides? The farmer or the temple council? The sad thing is it's the temple council. Because I'm the administrator, that means I know everything and I have authority over everything. And that's why all our farms fail. Right? Gita Nagari was farmed by one man. One man, and it was the best farm in the state. And now there's tons of people, and they can't farm the whole thing. A lot of it is fallow. Because it's a suburb now. It's not a farm. We have tons of them like that. Mwilimbah. 1,000-acre farm. 250 acres are actually arable. 750, you can't farm. Why would they buy that?
They don't have to see their neighbors.
You just plant a line of trees, two lines of trees, and you don't see your neighbors. You know, nice flat land, and I mean, you just go down from that, you know, a couple of kilometers, and there's these huge flat areas. You know? And they still have the mountain on that side, but they didn't buy it because of the Vastu, because it was there. Somehow or another, it's that. But you just go down the same direction, and your best farms are there. You're most expensive, you know. So it's like, so the point is they can't farm because no one wants to listen to the farmer. And why doesn't anyone want to listen to the farmer? Because the farmer, he comes to a meeting covered with cow dung. Who wants to talk to the guy covered with cow dung? You know what I'm saying? He does weird stuff. Takes bath with cow, you know how you say cow urine, you know, and you know, which is all right, but he doesn't wash it off, you know. And you know, he does weird stuff. He's a weird guy, you know. But he's a good farmer. But no one will listen to him when it comes to farming. So the point is then that's the culture. The king knows how to administrate. He knows the principles of farming. That's why he's going. But the point is farming is an art. So that's why he's going to listen to the man on the ground who does the farming. So because that's not happening, that's why the farms can't function. That's lack of culture. That's people not doing their duties. The administrators are not doing their duties. Why is it temples don't have businesses? Because they'll make the decision, not but the businessman. And then they can't even understand stuff like when the Prabhupada says 50%, he means 50% of profit, not 50% of the total income of money that comes in. They want 50% of whatever comes in. That means as you go 50-50-50, you know, a couple of months and there'll be no money left. But they don't understand it. You can tell them all day and they don't care. That's the way, because it works for them. So what is this? This is all lack of culture. This is where Varnashram is failing. You know, what is a brahmachari? Oh, if everyone's getting married, why be, you know, unrealistic and be a brahmachari? No, the point is, good brahmachari makes a good grihastha. Prabhupada said that. So that means we should be focusing on really good training for the brahmacharis. But what is really good training for the brahmacharis? You know, so that's not understood. That's lack of varnashram. So this is where we can, you know, means anybody who has Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya tendency, they should all know the puja and all these different things and cleanliness and shastra and everything, because they're the leaders of society. Right? As a devotee, the Shudra, he learns that, then great. He becomes second initiated, great. And he knows all that, but he's learning that because of ashram, not because of varna. The others are learning it because of varna. And so then they all know, so that way everybody knows the standards. They know what a festival, they know what an abhishek is. They know all these different things. Because they're the ones that are going to be your leaders, your temple presidents, your other things like this. So then they know how the abhishek works because they grew up in the Gurukul and they've been doing it for 10 years, 20 years. Nowadays, is, you know, which end of the Achman spoon you pick up, you know, might be a tough question. You know? You know? Or what is an Achman spoon? You know, you don't know. You know, it's like that. Is that... So the thing is the focus on what is the important thing. The farming is a detail. Because, and that's a detail for a Vaishya. Because, and this is another fun part. We were just reading it, what is it? Yesterday, day before yesterday. In Manu, when a Brahmin or a Kshatriya take up Vaishya duties because their duties aren't available, right? Because it's times of distress. They shouldn't take up farming and farming. They should take up business. They should take up trade. Because farming is specifically for Vaishyas. Just like managing the people is for the Kshatriya. So managing cows and land is for the Vaishyas. And teaching people, that's for the Brahmins. So it's not recommended. But it always be, no, everybody should be out there and everybody should be growing carrots. No. Only the Vaishyas and Shudras should be growing the carrots. Brahmins and Kshatriyas should not be growing carrots. They should know how it does. They should be supporting. They should be creating the favorable environment. But they shouldn't be doing it. So that's also a misnomer. You know. So then, therefore, all these different things is... Therefore, everybody's supposed to be growing carrots. You know. That's because here, if I was in the East Block, I'd say cabbages. But, you know. But they missed the whole point, is that Varnashram is a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle that is the most favorable for Krishna consciousness, because it's a lifestyle in the mode of goodness. It's how anybody in any ashram and in any varna can situate themselves in goodness. And then from goodness to pure goodness is very close. So the pure goodness is the devotional service. But somehow or another, Varnashram simply means the detail. It's not. The detail is secondary. It means kshatriya, if you can say in one word, it's protection. Like that. That is a kshatriya. He who protects. Not he who administrates and manages or, you know, carries around a big sword or this or that. It's who protects. He's a kshatriya. Who studies and teaches. That's a Brahmin. Right? Who makes money and gives in charity. That's a Vaishya. Who serves. That's a Shudra. But that's not understood. So how is one going to establish Varnashram? Because you don't even know what one's dealing with. So the point is Varnashram, one has to understand what it is. It's a culture by which everybody can be Krishna conscious. We may say, oh, but we don't care about it because we're just devotees. But the point is why are we devotees here and not devotees there? Right? Because we are conditioned. And Varnashram is simply how to engage conditioning in the Lord's service. Right? But at the same time, is because we're conditioned, we have something material to gain from that conditioning. We want something from our conditioning. So it teaches you how to deal with it in the mode of goodness so it's not detrimental to the position of Krishna consciousness. So that's what it's actually for. Then you have details on how everybody, you know, difference, how the Kshatriya functions, how the Brahmin, how the Vaishya, how the Shudra. Like, there's details, you know, Brahmacharya, the Grihastha, Vanaprastha. It's details. But if you don't understand the principle of what Varnashram is as a culture, it can't be established. Because it means right in the city. I've been in meetings, you know, the top, the GBC designated, you know, Varnashram meeting. And when you bring up the point about applying it in the cities and that, or like taking that, you can take Chopati and that it has elements, it has to be more pulled together, but it has elements there of the Varnashram aspect. You know, the Grihasthas there and they do all those kind of things. The Brahmacharis, they just do the preaching and the deity worship and this and that. And, you know, fundraising is done by the Grihasthas, not this and so many things. And the unanimous point is no, it can't be Varnashram because it's in a city. You can only be Varnashram if it's out there in the mud. That's the only place. If it's not there, it's not Varnashram. And then what's the next discussion on the agenda? Is whether we should call this group Varnashram. Because, you know, that's a bit scary. So now it becomes the, what is it, you know, the
Traditional yeah. lifestyle?
No. It's for Economic and Social Development Committee. Because they don't know what Varnashram is. Does that work? So the point is to establish Varnashram, you actually have to know what it is. Once we had somehow had a meeting here, all the Varnashramites from all over that came for the festival. There was like 50 people. And you're going around, say who you are, say something about your, you know, what you're doing in Varnashram. So I was presenting this. And then I was at one point cut off by somebody and said, you know, hey, you know, we're here to discuss Varnashram, you know, not all this philosophy. So, you know, let others speak now. Hey, you know.
That means what, it was all focused on living off the land?
All focused on living off the land, which is good, but for those who want to live off the land, in other words, for those who want to live off the land, we have those persons who are committed to that and dedicated to how we can cultivate that and develop that. Which is important, and it's a great, great service. But to say that encompasses Varnashram, it won't work. That's why no one's interested in Varnashram.
So really what you're saying then is those kinds of meetings should be renamed if this is a meeting of Vaishyas talking
yes.
about.
Yeah, or farming, because you might have Kshatriyas who have some land or this or that. They can do it, you know, like that. But they shouldn't be the ones necessarily that would look after it. If you have to, you do. But better is the Vaishyas looking after it. So it should be renamed, that it gives it its, you know, the dignity it's worth, but at the same time it doesn't claim to be actual Varnashram encompassing as a whole, because they're not discussing, you know, Vanaprastha or Brahmachari or this, because Varnashram means the whole thing, because an individual is going to move through that whole thing, right? In ashram, they move through the whole thing. In Varna, generally they pick one, but because devotees are joining from a culture that's basically based in ignorance. Much of the time is they do have a higher Varnashram nature, but they come into the society on a lower note. And then you'll see after a while that they're doing the thing, and then they kind of get into a little this and that, then they get into management, and then they end up, you know, being a Pujari or something like that. So I've seen it so many times. People go through all four, people through three, through two. It's all the time. So you kind of have to know what's the overall thing, at least the leadership, so they know how to place people. You know, otherwise, then you have a problem is that you have a temple project, you know, you have your five-year plan. So, yes, we want to get into, let's say, these different outlying areas. But, you know, right now we want to do this, collect the money, build the temple, and build the facilities. So everybody's got to do that. Then somebody comes along who can do one of those things. But we'll say, no, we're not going to do that now. You have to do this. But then when the 5 years comes, they're not around anymore. Well, if you had started them doing that, then that would have developed. And then in 5 years, it would have been matching. But the whole point is what I'm doing now, that's what the whole world does. And so that's why also then you can't, so many people aren't engaged. So but that means a lack of understanding how Varnashram works. Because when we say one acts according to his nature, God's saying that. You know, but we're the ones that say, we're devotees, it doesn't matter. Krishna doesn't say that. Arjuna was, hey, I'm going to the forest. Krishna says, you can't. You'll just do exactly the same thing in the forest. So the point is it's God who says you have the nature. God made the nature. So all it is Varnashram is recognizing the nature, but recognizing that that's the naimittic. It's the temporary. It's the condition. The real thing is Krishna consciousness. But that means we engage the temporary in Krishna service. That's sambandhagyan. Krishna is God, the living entity is a servant. He engages the material energy in the Lord's service. That's all. So all it is Varnashram tells what is the social and economic and these other, you know, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, how to engage them. You know, devotees are worried about affection and love and, you know, they, you know, some taste in life and all that, and they're not getting it. But that's all part of Varnashram. And you recommend it, people say you're crazy. You know, in other words, have a comfortable grihastha life. But the point is understand that it comes from the Vedas and understand how to do it. Otherwise, most people aren't comfortable. You know, most people don't enjoy. You know, they have all the facilities, all the independence. They don't have good stuff. They really don't. You know, so it's like, you know, if you're going to enjoy, at least enjoy. But you know, problem is, you know, it's like the guy who, the Brahmin who goes to the Muslim for water. And it's not even enough to quench the thirst. The Prabhupada comments on like that, you know. It was even that one time there was that sannyasi, and he fell down and he was with, you know, married some lady. And then later when Prabhupada saw the girl, he said, he fell down for her? It was like, hey, you know, what's happening here? So it's like, you know, if you're going to, you know. So in other words, what you do it properly. Because otherwise, then how do you know that it's done? How do you know when you hit 50, you've done it all? Because that's what Yayati was worried about. I haven't done it all. So then after that, he gave his youth back to his son and said, now I am, you know, convinced and satisfied that you cannot be satisfied in this world. That's what grihastha life is for. The purpose of grihastha life is that there's no use to it. That's the real purpose of it. But unless you do it nicely, how do you know? You know, in other words, if you're doing something and it comes out bad, how do you know that it's useless? You do it right, then you understand it's useless. That's the whole point. Yes?
Maharaj, are you saying if we have a tendency to enjoy moments then enjoy it properly?
Enjoy it properly means according, what does the Shastra say how to enjoy it? What I'm saying is if you don't enjoy according to the Shastra, you're not actually enjoying. You know what I'm saying? In other words, waking up in the morning and, you know, you don't remember what happened last night and some guy's arm is laying over you and you wish it wasn't there. That's not enjoying. You know, or it's not laying there, but how to, you know, get up and figure out where's all my stuff and like that so you can sneak off. Yeah, but you understand the point is there's a rule on how things work. So if you don't eat properly, you don't cook properly, you don't dress properly, you don't actually get the benefits. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it means if you're doing it, do it properly. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So according to one's means, one does things properly. But one should see what's the Vedic standard.
So you're saying, if you don't enjoy it properly, you won't get frustrated. But
yes.
You'll get satiated.
Means you'll get frustrated, but you'll always think by mental speculation, if I'd done it this way, then I would have been satisfied. So you always have that doubt. But the other way, you've done it properly, and you have no doubt. It's not possible to be happy. That's the point. You know what I'm saying? If I think if I eat 100 rasgulas, then I'll be happy. But, you know, I always end up short of 100 rasgulas. So then I'll never understand 100 rasgulas. You know, you almost die. That's not called happiness. You know, but I have this idea that that's happiness. Does that make sense? So we have an idea that this is happiness, but is it really happiness? So that's why the Vedas say, what is happiness? You know? They say, what's grihastha life? What's the interaction between husband and wife? What's the, you know, interaction with guests and children and everybody? The whole, because then you can see is that on the material level, this is as good as it gets. But it's not as good as Krishna consciousness. That's what you're supposed to see, is that the taste of material life and the taste of Krishna consciousness don't compare. The Krishna.
I also noticed in my travels that a lot of grihasthas are completely focused on spreading Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, it's good.
So that's their happiness.
Yeah.
It becomes very clear that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Because teaching, studying and teaching is the best of brahminical activities. So they're doing their duty. That's why they're happy. Right? So spiritually they're satisfied, but also socially they're satisfied. Like that. So from both sides. Like that. So that's the idea, is that those beings, that's your best, so those who can function. So the idea is that brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas, there is no kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. There's only brahminical. So brahmachari is a brahminical lifestyle. Vanaprastha is a brahminical lifestyle. Sannyas is a brahminical lifestyle. Only grihastha affords the expanding out into kshatriya, vaishya, and shudra. So that means is that, and for Vaishnav, the lifestyle is brahminical. So for someone to live the brahminical lifestyle and therefore be involved in preaching and teaching, that's natural. But if they have these other needs, then you engage them. But not such that it gets in the way of being able to do that. You know? So in other words, how much time you have extra, you'll always use it, because like you said, that's your happiness. So then, even though they have businesses, they have jobs, they find the time. In other words, they find the time, because that's what they like to do. So in other words, it's been a long day, so now they can go out and preach, rather than it's been a long day, so, you know, sit at home and, you know, vegetate. You know, so they find it.
It seems to be quite common, the latter.
Yes. Like, you know, vegetarians, vegetating, it goes together, you know.
I mean, part of it also is that some devotees get stuck in occupations that make them end up feeling like that at the end of the day. So
that's
connected from what they can contribute.
But the point is that's the occupation. It's simply money. At the end of the day, the money takes care of your family, which is Vaishnav, which is brahminical. And you come to the temple, you associate with the devotees, or they come to you, whatever it is. So it's only the occupation. Devotees also can't separate what's varna and what's ashram. That's also another important element of varna ashram. It's being able to understand what's the difference between the two. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a difference. You know, you get into everyone has rights and all that. But the point is rights where? In ashram or in varna? You know, because if you have a right, someone else has an obligation. It means if you have a right, that means someone else has an obligation. Right? But where you have a right, you also have an obligation. No one talks about obligations. Everyone talks about rights. We march for rights, no one marches for obligations. My rights, your obligation. But the point is they go together, they catch that, but it's not that my right, therefore I have an obligation that goes with that right. So then, you know, these are the weaknesses. They don't understand nature. You know, masculine, feminine, you know, the difference between varna and ashram, the difference in the levels of those, what is the position, the difference between, you know, the Krishna consciousness, the primary, the varna ashram is the supportive. You can't make these distinctions, and because of that, they can't apply it. So, therefore, we do the best we can with the first generation and work more on the second and third and fourth and like that. You know, in other words, the first can do it if they recognize it. So it's not a problem because it's natural. But just like you said, most are just unconscious, and so they don't even notice something like that exists. You know, it means you could walk into the house and ask them, why do they have that couch? Why those curtains? And they'd have to stop and think. They really would have to stop and think. And they might not even have an answer. A few people might, but most people wouldn't. You, like I was saying, you walk into a very, very wealthy person's house, it's not nouveau riche. You ask them why they have that, they'll tell you immediately. And you walk into the very poor person's house, they'll tell you immediately. You know, because it was out on the sidewalk. It was free. That's why they have it. You know. You understand? It's just this, you know, because that's the point. They're the ones that spend the money. Right? The poor ones don't have the money to spend. The rich ones are very careful about it. The middle ones are where you make all your profit. So they can't think. They're trained not to think. So that's the problem. So society is one meant to teach you to think. That's where the problem comes in. So for those who like to think, they can catch it. They can take advantage. And those who don't, then by chanting and that, by the direct activities, then they'll benefit. And they can go back to Godhead. But it doesn't mean their life won't be wild until they do. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai,
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai,
Jainatai Gaurav
Thank you.